Thanks, Don. welcome, everybody. Good to see you. Yay. Happy Sunday. I listened to this TED Talk this afternoon, and so I'm excited to share it with you. I can't tell you the name of it. I sent it to Don. She's going to play it. I have no idea what the name of it is, but it's good. I promise. I just don't have that in front of me. Don, do you have it in front of you? Do you know the name of it? You'll tell us all.
It is called Elizabeth Lesser, Say Your Truths and Seek Them in Others.
Say Your Truths and Seek Them in Others. So, and I'm going to recommend, like I usually do, that, you know, you jot down some notes so that we have something to talk about when the video is over. And as you know, we're looking at these because what these people do in these talks is they tell us the truths that they have learned through their own experience, and they're sharing that with us. And it's not a dogma. It's not something that they read in a book. It's something that they actually experienced. And I think this talk really shows that, really goes to the heart of what we learn here in Awakening Together without ever saying anything really about religion or any kind of dogma or anything like that. It's just the woman's experience. So I'll quit rambling, and I will turn this over to Dawn to share the TED Talk with us. Thanks, Dawn.
Like many of us, I've had several careers in my life, and although they've been varied, my first job set the foundation for all of them. I was a home birth midwife throughout my 20s. Delivering babies taught me valuable and sometimes surprising things, like how to start a car at 2 a.m. when it's 10 degrees below zero, or how to revive a father who's fainted at the sight of blood. Or how to cut the umbilical cord just so to make a beautiful belly button. But those aren't the things that stuck with me or guided me when I stopped being a midwife and started other jobs. What stuck with me was this bedrock belief that each one of us comes into this world with a unique worth. When I looked into the face of a newborn, I caught a glimpse of that worthiness, that sense of unapologetic selfhood, that unique spark. I use the word soul to describe that spark because it's the only word in English that comes close to naming what each baby brought into the room. Every newborn was as singular as a snowflake. A matchless mashup of biology and ancestry and mystery. And then that baby grows up. And in order to fit into the family, to conform to the culture, to the community, to the gender, that little one begins to cover its soul layer by layer. We're born this way, but as we grow, a lot of things happen to us that make us want to hide our soulful eccentricities and authenticity. We've all done this. Everyone in this room is a former baby with a distinctive birthright. But as adults, we spend so much of our time uncomfortable in our own skin. Like we have ADD, authenticity deficit disorder. But not those babies, not yet. Their message to me was, uncover your soul and look for that soul spark in everyone else. It's still there. And here's what I learned from laboring women. Their message was about staying open even when things are painful. A woman's cervix normally looks like this. It's a tight little muscle at the base of the uterus. And during labor, it has to stretch from this to this. Ouch! If you fight against that pain, you just create more pain and you block what wants to be born. I'll never forget the magic that would happen when a woman stopped resisting the pain and opened It was as if the forces of the universe took notice and sent in a wave of help. I never forgot that message. And now when difficult or painful things happen to me in my life or my work, of course, at first I resist them, but then I remember what I learned from the mothers. Stay open. Stay curious. Ask the pain what it's come to deliver. Something new wants to be born. And there was one more big soulful lesson, and that one I learned from Albert Einstein. He wasn't at any of the births, but it was a lesson about time. At the end of his life, Albert Einstein concluded that our normal hamster wheel experience of life is an illusion. We run round and round, faster and faster, trying to get somewhere, and all the while, underneath surface time is this whole other dimension where the past and the present and the future merge and become deep time, and there's nowhere to get to. Albert Einstein called this state, this dimension, only being. And he said when he experienced it, he knew sacred awe. When I was delivering babies, I was forced off the hamster wheel. Sometimes I had to sit for days, hours and hours, just breathing with the parents, just being, and I got a big dose of sacred awe. So those are the three lessons I took with me from midwifery. One, uncover your soul. Two, when things get difficult or painful, try to stay open. And three, every now and then step off your hamster wheel into deep time. Those lessons have served me throughout my life, but they really served me recently when I took on the most important job of my life thus far. 2 years ago, my younger sister came out of remission from a rare blood cancer, and the only treatment left for her was a bone marrow transplant. And against the odds, we found a match for her, who turned out to be me. I come from a family of four girls, and when my sisters found out that I was my sister's perfect genetic match, their reaction was, "Really? You? A perfect match for her?" Which is pretty typical for siblings. In a sibling society, there's lots of things. There's love, and there's friendship, and there's protection, but there's also jealousy, and competition, and rejection, and attack. In siblinghood, that's where we start assembling many of those first layers that cover our soul. When I discovered I was my sister's match, I went into research mode, and I discovered that the premise of transplants is pretty straightforward. You destroy all the bone marrow in the cancer patient with massive doses of chemotherapy, and then you replace that marrow with several million healthy marrow cells from a donor. And then you do everything you can to make sure that those new cells engraft in the patient. I also learned that bone marrow transplants are fraught with danger. If my sister made it through the near lethal chemotherapy, she still would face other challenges. My cells might attack her body, and her body might reject my cells. They call this rejection or attack, and both could kill her. Rejection, attack. Those words had a familiar ring in the context of being siblings. My sister and I had a long history of love, but we also had a long history of rejection and attack, from minor misunderstandings to bigger betrayals. We didn't have the kind of relationship where we talked about the deeper stuff, but like many siblings and like people in all kinds of relationships, we were hesitant to tell our truths, to reveal our wounds, to admit our wrongdoings. But when I learned about the dangers of rejection or attack, I thought, it's time to change this. What if we left the bone marrow transplant up to the doctors, but did something that we later came to call our soul marrow transplant? What if we faced any pain we had caused each other, and instead of rejection or attack, could we listen? Could we forgive? Could we merge? Would that teach ourselves to do the same? To woo my skeptical sister, I turned to my parents' holy text, the New Yorker magazine. I sent her a cartoon from its pages as a way of explaining why we should visit a therapist before having my bone marrow harvested and transplanted into her body. Here it is. I have never forgiven him for that thing I made up in my head. I told my sister we had probably been doing the same thing, carting around made-up stories in our heads that kept us separate. And I told her that after the transplant, all the blood flowing in her veins would be my blood, made from my marrow cells. And that inside the nucleus of each of those cells is a complete set of my DNA. I will be swimming around in you for the rest of your life, I told my slightly horrified sister. I think we better clean up our relationship. A health crisis makes people do all sorts of risky things, like quitting a job or jumping out of an airplane. And in the case of my sister, saying yes to several therapy sessions, during which we got down to the marrow. We looked at and released years of stories and assumptions about each other and blame and shame until all that was left was love. People have said I was brave to undergo the bone marrow harvest, but I don't think so. What felt brave to me was that other kind of harvest and transplant, the soul marrow transplant, getting emotionally naked with another human being, putting aside pride and defensiveness, lifting the layers, and sharing with each other our vulnerable souls. I called on those midwife lessons. Uncover your soul. Open to what's scary and painful. Look for the sacred awe. Here I am with my marrow cells after the harvest. That's what they call it, harvest, like it's some kind of bucolic farm-to-table event, which I can assure you it is not. And here is my brave, brave sister receiving my cells. After the transplant, we began to spend more and more time together. It was as if we were little girls again. The past and the present merged. We entered deep time. I left the hamster wheel of work and life to join my sister on that lonely island of illness and healing. We spent months together in the isolation unit, in the hospital, and in her home. Our fast-paced society does not support or even value this kind of work. We see it as a disruption of real life and important work. We worry about the emotional drain and the financial cost. And yes, there is a financial cost, but I was paid in the kind of currency that our culture seems to have forgotten all about. I was paid in love. I was paid in soul. I was paid in my sister. My sister said that the year after transplant was the best year of her life, which was surprising. She suffered so much, but she said life never tasted as sweet, and that because of the soul-bearing and the truth-telling we had done with each other, she became more unapologetically herself with everyone. She said things she'd always needed to say. She did things she always wanted to do. And the same happened for me. I became braver about being authentic with the people in my life. I said my truths, but more important than that, I sought the truth of others. It wasn't until the final chapter of this story that I realized just how well midwifery had trained me. After that best year of my sister's life, the cancer came roaring back. And this time there was nothing more the doctors could do. They gave her just a couple of months to live. The night before my sister died, I sat by her bedside. She was so small and thin. I could see the blood pulsing in her neck. It was my blood, her blood, our blood. When she died, part of me would die too. I tried to make sense of it all, how becoming one with each other had made us more ourselves, our soul selves, and how by facing and opening to the pain of our past, we'd finally been delivered to each other, and how by stepping out of time, we would now be connected forever. My sister left me with so many things, and I'm going to leave you now with just one of them. You don't have to wait for a life or death situation to clean up the relationships that matter to you, to offer the marrow of your soul and to seek it in another. We can all do this. We can be like a new kind of first responder, like the one to take the first courageous step toward the other, and to do something or to try to do something other than rejection or attack. We can do this with our siblings and our mates and our friends and our colleagues. We can do this with the disconnection and the discord all around us. We can do this for the soul of the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Dawn, for playing that for us. Yeah, so that was emotionally packed. Yeah, as Dawn's picture is showing us as she's wiping her eyes. Yeah, I'm just narrating for the radio, Dawn. Not trying to put you on the spot. does anybody have anything that they would like to share about the video? Jay?
It was beautiful.
Oh, Sharon, yeah.
It was the inspiration between the two siblings was magnificent. It's what we're doing with our own mind. As we heal everyone with us, so when they were talking about when you're in labor, when she spoke about you block what you want to be born, so you need to stay open and ask the pain what it's trying to say. So I do that when I have these uncomfortable thoughts. I put my hand on my heart because I don't sometimes know what thought I'm thinking. You know, the trigger becomes so I ask the pain and it does answer. And you know, I think all of us are stepping off the hamster wheel. We're done. I mean, we know that there's nothing here to get. We already have it all. We just want to just take away the blocks. You know, that's what we, when we give birth, we're actually blocking the birth. Like, I mean, I remember the resistance I had. And by resisting like that, we are actually giving ourselves more pain. So it's important to be gentle. And these two sisters had something that is just so beautiful. I mean, you know, I'm one of four girls and I love my siblings, but the only healing I can do is in my mind. So that's the most important thing. And, you know, when she said, sought the truth of others, the others are me. So it's all about love. And I just think it was magnificent. Thank you, Jacqueline. Thanks, Dawn.
Thank you, Sharon. Yeah, George.
Hi, Jacqueline and everyone. Here comes my dog, Boba, here. Boba, stand up here. Stand up.
Stand up and say hello.
He doesn't want to stand up. He's like, come on. So he's not, okay, get up. Yeah, no, he ran off. We just got home. This reminds me in 2008, my mom and dad were in a car wreck and my mom was killed and my dad was banged up. He had two broken ankles, a broken left shoulder, a broken right wrist. So he was pretty immobile. My brother-in-law is a doctor in Little Rock. They had gone to the ER and picked him up and brought him straight home after the wreck. I was retired, so I was able to go and spend several weeks as he got some strength back and healed up a little bit. And you know, it was a real privilege. So, yeah, just remembering that brings back the emotion. But I'll stop with that. But that's, you know, there's no greater gift that you can give to someone than yourself.
Mm. Amen. Sweet, sweet. Thank you, George, for sharing that. Yeah, absolutely. Jay.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Jay, are you going to share?
Yeah, I'm going to share. When my father passed, we all knew that was going to be coming for quite a few months, even about a year and a half before that was actually going to happen. You know, because he was deteriorating. And in that time, and even before that, when he had his first stroke, I set out to make my relationship right with my father. I lived in Kansas City at the time and I got to see him once or twice a week. And I think it was a blessing that he had the stroke because he couldn't speak like he used to be able to. And he was very receptive in a way that I'd never known him to be. And it was neat to be more natural around my dad, who always kept people pretty much, you know, at arm's length. And we came a lot closer in that time, and I really felt tremendously healed. So I did apply in my own life what she was suggesting about make your relationships right, the ones that are important. And I put a little note on the hospital wall, I love you, Dad, you know, when he was on his deathbed. And it was in Louisville. I lived in Louisville when he passed, and I was trying to fly. I took one flight from Louisville to Kansas City when we thought he was going to pass, but then he seemed to recover. But then about a week later, he actually did pass. And I tried to get on the flight to get back there to be with him right at his last moments, but I missed him by about a half hour. Mm-hmm. And, but I felt good because I felt like my relationship with him was right. And, I think it's so important to do that with our significant relationships while they're with us here alive, because when they're gone and you don't have any more opportunity to do it. So I think Jacqueline, you're probably the most authentic person I've ever met and genuine. And I like the name of your program, Something Genuine. I mean, you're a perfect person to have a program with that name. and then this TED Talk was about that very subject. So perfect. I just really appreciate the message. So that's it.
Thank you, Jay, for sharing. And for all your comments. And it's just, it really is amazing, isn't it? How facing the death of a loved one leads us to be authentic. And and as you said, Jay, the invitation from this woman whose name I didn't write down, so I can't say it. Elizabeth Lesser, maybe something like that. Yeah. But the invitation is to be authentic now in all of our relationships. And it struck me that particularly as we're building a community, a physical community in La Vita. This is, thank you, Elizabeth Lesser. Thank you, Don. This message becomes vital, I think. But not just with our physical community, but with our online community here. You know, we all talk a good talk about you know, letting go of the persona, the mask, the individual self, and yet, you know, do we come into our encounters with each other naked, right? Yeah, not physically naked, obviously, but right, without that mask, can we just come in and be who we are? Or do we need to have a little bit more knowledge? You know, do we need to be a little bit more, I don't know, whatever, outgoing than we would normally be? But or can we be authentic in these relationships with each other? That's really the question. Can we be authentic? And if we can't, why not? What are we waiting for? Right? What are we protecting? Can we become these first responders? She says we can be like a new kind of first responder, like the first one to take the first courageous step toward the other and to do something or try to do something other than rejection or attack. Because if we're pretending, that's really what we're doing. We're rejecting ourselves, right? If we can't be authentically who we are, then we're rejecting some part of ourselves, aren't we? And frankly, not being authentic is actually an attack on the other person as well. It's like, it's the opposite of trusting that person. To be able to be fully authentic with the other person is complete trust in that person to receive me as I am. And to not do that is really an attack on that person. It's an assumption that you'll be unfairly treated or taken advantage of or whatever, right? So I'm attacking their character, their ability to be soul responders if I can't be authentic with them. And I think it's interesting. I see Glenn just came back in the room. Glenn, I just think it's so interesting how these talks dovetail with one another, because you were just talking about this. You said creating a culture we want to live in is power. You said you do know how to be yourself and to give yourself away. Well, that's the one thing we do know, is how to be ourselves. And let's learn to be ourselves and to give ourselves away. I see Rhoda has her hand up, and then Glenn, I'll turn the mic over to you. But Rhoda.
Hi. After last week's TED Talk, I figured I better get ahead of this one because it took me a full 24 hours to stop being mad at you for that one. So
I don't even remember what it was, but yay.
Oh, I remember. Trust me, I remember. but it was beautiful. And when I came out the other side, I felt this beautiful commitment come over me that I thought, there's no way I'm missing next week. I'm showing up, and so glad that I did. And I kind of actually went down a different path, because as I was listening to her talk, I thought, you know, I don't know of a place that I don't struggle with uncovering and being authentic. I believed at one point in my life that I was completely authentic and totally truthful and exactly who I am. And I'm starting to see that that is not true. And I'm questioning a lot these days about what I think I once knew, which I know is great. But it sort of sent me down the path of those relationships that have been the most hurtful, that have been the hardest to recover from, that, have, you know, that I've put the most covers over the soul as a result of, and how it seems to me that those continue to inform my inability to be I don't even think that that's the truth. I just feel like there's a block that says, I am not allowing myself to be authentic because I still think that someone else knows me better than I know myself. So therefore I don't know how to be myself. Wow. And I thought that was interesting, because that's obviously not the truth. And I'm really grateful to notice it, because now I can do some root cause inquiry and get down to whatever is really happening here. But yeah, once again, it has stimulated me, that which I know will be, you know, whatever number of hours of work ahead of me. So thank you for finding that video, Jacqueline, and sharing it. Letting go of Mike.
That's powerful, Rhoda. Thank you. Sorry for the long hours ahead, but yeah, that's really powerful. I'm really thrilled to hear it, frankly. Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. Clint, did you want to share?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you for quoting me. That's lovely. You know, I mean it though. You know, and it's the Course in Miracles that works through me and that changes my life and that has allowed me to what I'm beginning to say now is fall in love with myself, so that I can give that so you can fall in love with me too. It's become really powerful. I gave a talk, the last sermon I gave at Church for the Shooting Minimum. Actually, I talked about my mother as my first guru, and the lesson that she, her primary lesson to me was that the way she lived, if she lives by a creed, it's everybody deserves your best. You know, everybody deserves to meet the best you. You know, the most informed, the most lovely, the kindness, the best you. Everybody deserves, you know, without conditions, deserves to, you know you. She never talked down to kids. She didn't talk down to, you know, staff or anything like that. You know, she was always, everybody deserves your best. And I try to live by that. That's a message of authenticity. My late father, whom I got to watch slowly die from Alzheimer's over a 10-year period, you know, talk about watching, you know, that was just really, really difficult for me to watch, because in the family, I'm the one who looks exactly like him. You know, I look like my dad. So every time I would come around or be around the thing, the nurses, everybody was like, oh God, I know who you are. And so it's a lot of projection as me as a kid, but it was really, really really kind of lovely to experience the projection that people did to my father. They did it on me, and that was really very interesting. My father's big message to me was the fulfillment and happiness only comes through the service to others. You know, that's the only way you get it. That's the only way you're happy, the only way you're ever going to get what you want and to be happy and to be lovely and experience deep joy is in service to other people. And I'm 55, and I'm just beginning to explore the depth of that, you know, because it's, you know, Bob Dylan got it right. You are going to serve somebody, you know, you are, we all are. But being conscious and choosing to serve doing what is mine to do is a real gift. And one of the things that people quote me from the group is, and you just kind of mentioned it, Jacqueline, goes, if you don't show up and nobody knows you, if you don't show up to your own life and nobody knows who you are, you're just mean. You know? You're just mean. You're just being mean, you know? So it's like, I'm giving Yolanda and I are fortunate enough to be a part of Open Mic. It's a group. It's kind of like a TED Talk kind of thing. And this is, so this Tuesday, we're going to be in New York. We've been asked to give a couple of talks to talk about what it is like to live in the trans world, because I'm married to somebody who's trans, you know, wanting like trans experiences and stories from trans and people who love them and things like that. And so one of the things that I'm going to be talking about is this idea that your authenticity is something that you discover that we each discover ourselves, you know, and that I want to know you, you know, and I want you to know me. I don't want you to think I'm perfect. I want you to know me. That's a lot messier project. You know, I'm willing to fail in front of you because I trust you. That's the world I want to live in. So it's like just really the weight on my, I did not realize how much that the thing in the back of my head saying, don't do that. You can't do this. You know, the slow beat of anxiety that I lived with for so long, you know, that I didn't even know was there. It was such a background noise, just so background. I moved every 2 years, every couple of years of my life. So I was always the new kid. So I had to learn the new rules. I had to learn new rules and new culture over and over and over again. So the truth was the way the culture operated, you know, not universal truth. I had to keep learning another system, keep learning another, you know, way of doing things just to fit in, you know, being the new kid or whatever like that. So learning all those rules over and over and over again, I spent my time learning what the world expected of me and no time learning of what I wanted to be in the world, you know? So, and I learned, and I'm now beginning to learn that my father was always trying to teach me that. And my mother was always trying to teach me that. Everybody deserves your best. And you will find fulfillment only in service and falling in love with myself so that you can fall in love with me too. So I'll end with that.
Amazing. Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you, Glenn. That's perfect. That's really perfect. And it seems like it should be an easy thing to do, right? To figure out who we are and then share that. But it's not necessarily. You know, first you got to figure out that you're full of, you know, crap, that you're not the self that you would present to the world. Right. And then get real with yourself. And that can be hard to do. That can be really hard to do. Who else would like to share? Yeah. Shauna.
Get unmuted there. That was just beautiful. It made me cry too. The thing that struck me the most while I was sitting here contemplating that is the false self can't be authentic, because I was looking in myself, where is authenticity? And I have to drop back behind the self-will, behind the mask to awareness to be authentic. And so that's something that I'm going to really explore with intention and sincerity and innocence, and to remember we're innocent. I heard you say that we're real good at talking about it, and I just wanted to hide when you said that, because I said the promise this morning, and of course I'm going to falter. Of course I'm going to make mistakes. My intention is to sincerely put my practice to work, but we celebrate our mistakes. We don't feel bad about them. I immediately wanted to feel bad about every time I didn't do that promise.
Yeah.
But no, we have to celebrate our mistakes so I can see when I'm not doing it.
Amen, Shauna.
You know, and that's what I don't want to be afraid of a trying. I want to try to do my practice the best I can do right now. And I also think that it says don't wait for a life or death situation, right? Do it right now. And that's what my heart sincerely wants to do. But I know I'm going to fail. I know I'm not going to do it right often. But I'm going to do it. Damn it. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to step forward and do this because this Woo-hoo! Is beautiful. Thank you.
That's awesome, Shauna. Yeah, Shauna, you are the poster child for sincerity. no one here is going to question your sincerity. Yeah, and but I really appreciate you making the point that that we have to, we always have to be gentle with ourselves. We always have to be gentle with ourselves. That's the way that we continue to be willing to look. Thank you for sharing that. Dawn.
I just want to reiterate, yes, to, you know, especially you, Shauna, since you made that commitment this morning. And I'm with you on that commitment to let go of giving myself a hard time. So anytime you catch me, please, you know, you can just private message me. Hey, I'm okay with that. But I love what you said, because if I'm thinking I'm bad because I'm not keeping my intention, well, that is giving myself a hard time. So then it's just in the gentle noticing and seeing of it. But what I just want to say thank you for this video. It was so funny because I was trying so hard not to cry today. I almost succeeded. It's like, I'm going to get through one day without crying. But it was sweet tears because it was touching, of course, because you could feel the heart, her heart and her sister's heart. My question is, well, she says that, you know, she admonishes us, don't let a life or death situation happen. Just go ahead and go for it and have that talk and put yourself out there or whatever. My question is, if you've already done that, put yourself out there and you want to have a bare, I mean, naked to the soul, bare bones, bare bone marrow, the whole nine, you want to with your every fiber of your being, like everything within you wants that. And then the other person clearly is not in that place. See, her sister was put in a position where, and after she said, you know, you're going to have my blood swimming for the rest of your life through you. And that was the sister's real huge wake up call to say, yeah, like, yeah, you're right. So let's take a look at this because there is a strong possibility I could reject your cells. Now, my situation is that there is no bone marrow transplant, but if, and I swear to God, if that were to come up and I needed, I would, if that's what it takes. But with that being said, it brought up a lot of sadness for me. I mean, I was crying because it was touching, but I'm crying too because it's sad because that longing is there and it's one-sided and there's constant rejection. Like her sister was put in a position to where she was forced to open. The other person isn't in a position. It's just, it feels like it takes two. I mean, I've tried to have this conversation and the person literally ran away from me. Almost ran in traffic to get away from me. So, I mean, I so did not want to cry, but here it is. Here I am, tears and all, you know, and it is what it is. But at the same time, my soul longs for that healing. I mean, I know I'm trying to practice all the gentle healing year one, you know, tips. Like today was helping me so, so much. I shared that with you, Jacqueline.
Yeah, you did.
I know not to believe my thoughts, but it's really hard when you see this beautiful healing, this gorgeous healing. Yeah. And I kind of knew when she was talking about it, I kind of had a feeling that the sister was going to die. I just knew it. I was like, yeah. And, but at the same time, it's, you see that and you're like, I want that. I want that so bad. And when you see it and then I'm like blocked, you know, it's like talk to the hand or not even that. It's like literally the person running away from you. So, and then my guidance is let them go. Yeah. And I've asked Holy Spirit over and over and over again, am I to talk? Am I to say goodbye? What am I to do? And every single time it's the same answer. Let it go. Let it go.
Well, and I think I think Glenn had it right, Dawn, when he was talking about the greatest joy is selfless service. I thought it was interesting because, you know, that's our quote for our trustee meeting is a quote from Mother Teresa about that. Yeah. Isn't that something? But really it's all in the giving, Dawn. I think that's absolutely applicable to what you're saying. It's like just the giving of the love, you know, to have give all to all. It's that giving that love is discovering who we are. Right. And that's what it's all about. It's all about giving it away. And I understand your situation. I know that it sounds difficult, particularly in your situation. But really the joy, the true love, the true service is in giving. Well, it does. It doesn't matter whether it's received is what I'm trying to say. It really doesn't matter whether it's received. We learn who we are, what we are, that we are that love as we give that away, regardless of whether we see the effects of it being received. It's always received. But whether or not there's something palpable, something to hang on to, something tangible to hang on to, is none of our concern. But it's always received. It could not be received. The love that we give, it just is. It's the nature of love.
Yeah. Well, and I just want to tell you something. You're beautiful. To heal with all of us, I love you. You know, to be brave like that, because all of us have those feelings, you know, that come up because we're one mind. And what I was wanted to say is that you can't be authentic in the full self. Sharon cannot be authentic. You can't fix an ego. Like, I've been in the 12 steps for years, and it's all about love yourself, but you're loving a mind that doesn't love. It doesn't know how. So when you were sharing about the best of you, are you talking about, this is what I'm confused about, are you talking about the personal or the wholeness of who you are? You know, because the personal can't change. It's a full self.
Yeah, and I think Sharon, that gets back to this whole idea of being authentic. You know, you're sharing whatever is on your heart. Right? I mean, if you're sharing from your heart, you're sharing from your true self. You know, if you're not making up some image of, you know, somebody really cool or whatever, this is how they would share, or somebody really giving or kind, this is what they would share, or, you know, somebody that owes somebody something, or a good wife or a good mother or a good sister, this is what they would share. If you're being authentic, if you're digging down and really just being authentic and sharing from your heart, the only thing that's there to share is love.
Yes.
That's what's truly there. So that's the authenticity we're looking for.
Yeah. Thank you. It's beautiful. The whole thing. By the way, Elizabeth Lesser is a spiritual teacher. She wrote, I have her book, The Seeker's Guide, but she's written on quite a few books.
I had no idea of that. Thank you for telling us that. Yeah. Interesting. Cool. Dawn?
And then the part where Rhoda was sharing, and I could relate to that so much, because you have these family members who, you know, they've been around you for before your spiritual journey even began, or however that's said correctly. And my true heart's desire is to be my authentic self with them. And yet there is such a heavy filter. No wonder, because they're coming from their ego. But at the same time, I mean, in this community, at least I can feel that it's okay to share.
Yeah.
But that is not the case with my family. And I have tried. And it's not just the one. So, yeah.
Glenn, did you want to speak to that? Yes, please.
Sure. My family is not interested at all. I'm not married. Because I don't marry the gender that they wanted me to marry. So I'm not married. I can't be a preacher because of my sexual orientation. There's on and on and on. There's never been a time in my life where my family sided with me over against anyone, whether it was a school, a teacher, a principal, a bully, a grade. Anything. My family has never sided with me, ever. It hurts because I want it for them. I want this connection with them. I really, really, really do. My brother and I used to be very, very, very close. We were so close. We're called Irish twins, you know, when you're born like within like 11 months of each other. Like we're Irish twins. We're not Irish, but that's the term. We were one of those kids that had, they're born so close that you create your own language. So, but we were pre-verbal at the same time. So my brother and I created our own language between the two of us. That's how like close and enmeshed we were with my brother. And my brother is so far right wing, just it's awful, Adam Waffen, you know, out there, you know, proud racist and xenophobe, and just it really breaks my heart. But what I wanted to tell you, what I wanted to say to this is, before Yolanda, I got my heart broken wide open, like I did not know what was possible. I did not know that was possible for me. And I hope this is not the case for you, Dawn, because it hurts so bad. I was rejected for falling in love with this man, and it was ugly, running through the rain tears. Days and days of just not being able to feel like a whole person again, not being able to take a shower to be clean enough, not being able to stand in the sun to be warm enough, not being able to, it took days. And I can still think of those situations and mourn. But if I hadn't have had my heart broken and said, all right, fine, if I'm going to be alone, or I'm going to do this or whatever like that, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And if it's going to be alone, then it's going to be alone. I'll, you know, whatever's ahead for me, I know it's going to be the best, because this is what's happening. I don't like it and I don't understand it, but I don't have to. But as soon as I didn't require Gordon to come back into my life, me to heal, things to get better, me to understand, as soon as I said, I don't want to understand or need to understand, what I want to do is about living my life and giving myself away and being of service and finding out who I am and falling in love with who I am. You know, I had to completely get wrecked to have myself torn. I let myself be torn open, blubbering for days and crying through the rain and running, and just I ran every day and ran, and that's all I could think of to do. I literally ran and miles and miles and miles a day just to get out, just because I was just so broken.
Wow.
But that brokenness, or healing from it, or whatever happened with it, or letting go, or forgive, or whatever I did, to like say, that's fine. If this is me for the rest of the thing, I'm going to learn to love that, and that's not an option. I found Yolanda, or Yolanda found me, or I could see Yolanda. I couldn't see her before. I didn't see her. So, you know, I don't have any advice except that I'm loved, really, really loved, in a way that I did not think that was possible, because I got my heart broken by somebody who could not love me. I said, fine, if that's not the way it's going to be, I'm going to love myself. And the person who recognizes that will be the one for me.
Gorgeous.
And I was able to see her. I was able to see her, and when we came together, we saw each other, and we have never been apart.
That was gorgeous. Yay!
I love you, Dawn.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing, Glenn. Thank you so much, everybody, for sharing. This is fabulous being together with you in this way, and I'll let go of the mic. See you next time.